Over the summer, 99 scientists achieved a major milestone, something that's been decades in the making. They completed the full sequence of the human genome. Back in 2003, then-President Bill Clinton announced the completed first draft of the human genome.
We are here to celebrate the completion of the first survey of the entire human genome. Without a doubt, this is the most important, most wondrous map ever produced by humankind.
As he said, though, that was a survey, and there were still some gaps. For the next few decades, about 10% of the genome remained unknown. Now, after some more years of work, scientists have cracked that last 10%, and with it, they've discovered millions of new differences among individuals and over 100 functional genes. We're talking now about the completion of the human genome and what it means for research, maybe for medicine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the completion of the human genome map? How do you think this could change science? Do you have an inherited condition, or does a genetic disorder run in your family? How is being able to know that if you've had one of those genetic profiles changed your life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Chris Saha is an associate professor of biomedical engineering at UW-Madison and co-chair of the National Institutes of Health Somatic Cell Genome Editing Program. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Chris, can you take a little time to explain what the human genome is? What is this thing that we have this now complete map of?
Yeah, the human genome and the genome in general typically refers to the set of instructions for the cell. Is a blueprint to make our own bodies. And so it typically refers to the DNA, but it can also include associated proteins and also messenger RNA that the cell also uses to encode information. The saying goes that we have 99.9% of our genome the same between two different people. And it's the 0.1% that makes us who we are. So, you know, I think the completion helps us get a really fine grain picture of exactly, you know, the 100% of the genome, and gives us a map of how to think about that 0.1% difference that could be so important.
I think I grew up with an overly simplistic notion, Chris, of how genes work. The idea that, okay, if you have gene A, it's going to flip this switch. If you have gene B, it's going to flip that switch. And that's the end of the story. These things are a lot more complicated than that, right? Could you talk about the complex systems that arise from our genes and the proteins they create?
Sure. I mean, so these genes interact. It could be that if gene A is on and gene B is off, you get, you know, let's say one type of trait, blue colored eyes. If you have both of them on, you might have black eyes, et cetera. So that's really among typically a small number of genes that biologists and clinicians have figured out that can be kind of related to one particular behavior or trait. You know, we're now in the territory when you think about the whole genome of thousands of different genes that are coming together to give us all of the different functions that each of our cells do. So that level of data and analysis is really staggering in some ways. So I think this new version has mapped out 19,969 protein coding genes. And so that's that many different proteins that can either stick to one another, can, you know, really affect how they function within a cell. And one small amino acid change, one letter in the human genome, could render one of those proteins totally non-functional. And when that happens, that could perhaps be a central hub in thousands or hundreds of other proteins coming together to properly make a cell work. So for instance, one of the diseases that we study in my lab is an inherited retinal disorder. And we found that one single base pair change, if you inherit it from your mom, for instance, could stop your photoreceptors in the back of the eye from sensing light. And it leads to an inherited form of blindness. And we really can only find that out by looking at the right place in the human genome, identifying that gene, looking at every single protein in that that's encoded by that gene, and then find the one amino acid that's different in one of the two copies of that gene that you have in that patient. And so, you know, this is going from 3 billion letters down to one. It's really like having a needle in a haystack to identify, you know, potentially one gene and then one base of that gene that's problematic. That's important for us because then we can start to figure out how to address that change. And some of the tools that we're working on in the consortium you mentioned, the Genome Editing Consortium funded by taxpayer dollars at the NIH, is developing new ways to go in and fix, you know, the letter and the base that's changed specifically in the back of the eye without hitting any other parts of the genome.
We're talking to Chris Saha, Associate Professor of Biomedical Engineering at UW-Madison, looking at the completed map of the human genome and the research and possible therapeutic uses of that information. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Annie is with us in La Crosse. Annie, hi.
Hi. Say, to start out, I want to say that Medicare does not pay for genetic testing in cancer. I had uterine cancer, and my father died very young of colon cancer, and there can be a genetic relation there. But because Medicare doesn't pay for it, we just had to do kind of like a family tree thing. But, you know, the problem is my grandparents came from Russia, so who knows what happened back there, and they all died from other stuff before they were even my age. So I just want to say that was what I wanted to say, is that Medicare does not pay for genetic testing.
Annie, thanks for the call. Now, without getting into the funding model for this, are we at a point, Chris, where we can gain useful information about, say, in Annie's case, future cancer risk if we are able to get a good profile of all or part of her genome?
Yes, there's a lot of people working on this, including a lot of folks at UW-Madison. There's something called genomes that you can get from blood, so circulating cancer genomes. And this discovery has been made, I would say, arguably over the last decade or two. And if you're able to compare the sequence of those cancer genomes to the regular genome that you would find in a healthy cell, you can start to map out differences that give you a snapshot of what's happening specifically within the cancer. So this is being used more and more for diagnostic purposes. It helps us give us a very detailed picture of what people call driver mutations of these cancers. So unfortunately, in some of our cells, as they make copies, you can develop these driver mutations that lead to abnormal behavior in cancer. Some of those occurred during the lifetime of a patient. It could come from some sort of mutational hit to the bodies. For instance, if you're exposed to sun quite a bit, you may see those arise de novo or new after a lot of sunlight exposure. More often, it can be mapped to what people call germline or inherited mutations from parents to give you risk alleles. So BRCA1 is one of these most famous risk alleles for breast cancer. And so if you're able to start to decode what these genes are showing and establish variants that associate with cancer progression and risk, then you're able to come up with different treatment regimens for them. And I would say this is still, unfortunately, a research question for many types of cancers. We are doing that here in Madison. And as soon as, you know, we see the value of it in clinical trials, then it has to go through the process of getting reimbursed. That can take years, if not maybe decades in some cases, which is frustrating, as I could sense, but that's where we are. Certainly this new picture will give us potentially new areas of the genome to look at for risk alleles for cancer.
Annie, thanks for sharing your difficult story. I appreciate you calling in. Chris Saha is with us, Associate Professor of Biomedical Engineering at UW-Madison. He's talking to us about the complete sequencing of the human genome, what it can mean for disease detection, for example, and maybe treatment. We'll get into that a little more. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about what this means, this information from the human genome, and what potentially could be done with it? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with UW-Madison Biomedical Engineering Associate Professor Chris Saha about the completion of the mapping of the human genome, a project 20 years plus in many ways in the making. You can join in with your questions about what this all means, the potential for future research, for future medical treatments, maybe using that information at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or something maybe in your life that you think might have been helped if you had that information. 800-642-1234 is the number. Chris, let's talk about potential treatments. And let's go back to that research you were working on with colleagues that you mentioned earlier about that one amino acid change that can affect vision so severely. Are we at a point where now that we know where that is, at some point we can edit that amino acid, we can tweak it and fix the problem?
Yeah, I believe we're getting very, very close to doing this in patients. Thus far, my work with colleagues here have done it in human cells that have the change in the amino acid. And what we see is when we fix it in the cells, they rescue the function so they can help support phototransduction, and we get the proper protein expressed. And this is using some of the genome editing tools that we've been developing in my lab and has been developed at a really rapid pace over the last 8 years or so. And this is the CRISPR family of genome editors. And one of the questions that we have in the field is, could we deliver enough of this through a single injection into the eye to hit enough of the tissue in the eye to give a therapeutic response? And we're working on new ways to deliver those types of genome editors into the back of the eye. We have ideas of using viral vectors. We have ideas of using polymers and kind of shrink wrap type of coatings to these systems to get them into the right cells to hit the right gene. You know, just practically in terms of how we go about this research, we know where we want to edit. One concern that the FDA has is, how do you know that you're not accidentally hitting other parts of the genome? And what this more complete human genome gives us is a more detailed map and ability to measure whether we've hit the other part of the genome. Because, you know, if we have a map that's arguably 90% complete and we're trying to figure out where we're trying to, how to edit it, and essentially 10% of it is just blank. We're not sure whether whether we've hit that 10% is blank. And now that we have a full picture, we can, I think, more safely develop some of these therapeutics such that we don't accidentally hit the other, you know, previously uncharted 10%.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Carol is with us in Mauston. Carol, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Carol?
Well, I've always been interested in getting my whole genome done, and I'm wondering how soon it will be when that can be done in a meaningful way to my own individual characteristics.
Carol, thanks for the call. And I know there are services, Chris, of course, lots of ancestry services, for example, some do it for medicine, that map, I think, at least some of our genome, but not the whole deal, if I'm not mistaken. How much effort does it take to take Carol, say, and map out her personal genome?
I think it's doable now. There are services, and the sequencing technologies that were used in this newest version of the human genome can kind of read longer bits of the genome at a time. If you think about reading, you know, the 3 billion code, we would before read about 100 to 1,000 sequences of it at a time and then assemble it together. Now we can read millions, maybe tens of millions of bases at a time, and it's much easier to assemble those bits into the whole genome. And I think the prices and the prices have gone down because the technologies have gotten quite a bit better. And if it's really kind of a important question for clinical treatment, then it can actually be reimbursed in some cases. There are groups in the country and in research hospitals that have cohorts of patients that are called like the undiagnosed disease network. And what they do is their constellation of symptoms doesn't really map to any known disease. And in that case, you would go and try to map and sequence the whole genome. It is expensive, so that's not typically standard of care for really many type of disorders, or, you know, especially if you're healthy, because it is quite a significant investment to do that, but it can be done.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that call, Carol.
Research. Sorry.
That's okay. We're talking to Chris Saha, Associate Professor of Biomedical Engineering at UW-Madison. Thanks for the call, Carol. And Chris, I want to spend a couple minutes on an implication of Carol's question. I know people are hoping that we can have some sort of personalized medicine where with detailed genetic information, we'll know that Carol might have one propensity for a disease, I might have a different one, she might respond to a medication in one way, I might respond to it differently. What kind of hope do you have that we're going to reach that point of personalized medicine in our lifetimes?
Yeah, I think we're incrementally getting there. And it's when the stakes are high, you know, for instance, picking the right therapeutic when you're at a late stage cancer, doing really personalized genetic sequencing can be quite fruitful. And that's already the case. There's oncology teams and research hospitals that regularly do this now. In many cases, it's not as straightforward as finding one single genotype that will explain a very important kind of medical outcome or make a clinical decision, you know, easily right now, because our understanding of the genome is still quite, you know, partial and incomplete. So I think these types of technologies, when we're mapping the genome better, we're editing it and perturbing it in new ways to find out how various parts and genes of the genome come together and function. as we link that to behavior, we'll get more and more personalized type of treatments. And so, you know, in some ways, I think it's kind of like micro-targeting ads in social media. The more data you get by reading the genome, the better off we'll get in terms of treatment. But it's not like we flip a switch and all of a sudden we'll have personalized medicine.
It's a good place to leave it, Chris. Thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me. This was fun.
Chris Saha is an associate professor of biomedical engineering at UW-Madison and co-chair of the National Institutes of Health Somatic Cell Genome Editing Program. He joins us today to look at the completion of the mapping of the human genome, what it means for future research, and possibly for medical treatment in the not-too-distant future.